This is the Wake Up Zone, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors, with Blaine Bishop, Mark Howard, and Kevin Ingram on 104.5 The Zone.
.701 on the Wake Up Zone on 104.5 The Zone, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors. When trust matters, you can count on All Four Seasons Garage Doors in Nashville. Professional garage door installation and repair from a family-owned and operated business. Visit FourSeasonsGarages.com to learn more. Mark Howard along with Blaine Bishop. Kevin Ingram off this week. He'll be back on Monday. And, of course, our producer, Jonathan Schaefer. A little bit later in this hour, we're going to have David Beauclair on from SI.com talking Titans. But we're going to keep the conversation going. Talking about John Robinson's interview with our Paul Kaharsky, of the Midday 180 and paulkaharsky.com. And the other thing they talked about that Paul broached is a question about the kickers. They have Tucker McCann in, an undrafted free agent from Missouri, who, by the way, I was watching is him kicking against Vanderbilt. Of course, Greg Joseph of the Titans and you know, just exactly, you know, what he brings to the table, we're not totally sure since he only attempted one field goal last year. And the question came up, would you be interested in Steven Gostkowski, the longtime kicker of the Patriots, who is a free agent right now? And Robinson said, absolutely, Blaine. But, you know, of course, you know, we're talking about a compressed training camp period as far as preseason games, and it'll be interesting to see how that competition goes.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think now you're going to overcompensate, you know, what you probably didn't do last offseason when your kicker was injured, your veteran kicker was injured, you know, during the offseason, and then you thought he'd be healed. To a certain point, you thought, oh, okay, he'll be fine, and then all of a sudden, he's not fine. Then you're scrambling around for, you know, next thing you know, you have two or three kickers. So this time, you're going to say, okay, we're going to go into the mine with Joseph, but if he doesn't pan out, we're going to definitely have a veteran. And as I always say, you have to bring in a veteran kicker. If you're talking about winning a Super Bowl and a championship run, the kicking game, the kicker is going to win you a couple of those games. I'm sorry. They're going to make some throughout this you know, season and throughout a game that you got to make, you got to feel like it's automatic. It's automatic, like kicking an extra point. I mean, well, now these days, extra points aren't as easy to some of those kickers. I think you have to bring in someone who is proven, and you have him on a back burner. You bring him into camp and let him compete, and then hopefully Joseph, who you haven't seen in a stressful situation really, see how he handles having a veteran, proven kicker they're competing. And if it, you know, you keep Joseph, you can always sign Gostkowski or another veteran kicker down the road. But I definitely want to see him compete, especially without a training camp. If that happens, oh man, I got to have competition at practice at the highest level I can, because it's not going to duplicate, you know, in a game. But you want to make it as tough as possible.
Well, referring to last year, you know, people are going to point out, oh, you know, Tannehill played way over his head. You know, Derrick Henry was off the charts. But I'll say this. The Titans were 8-for-18 in field goals. It is a flat-out miracle with that stat that they reached the AFC Championship in the current NFL, which still is a field goal league. To have that bad a place-kicking numbers, to me, if you showed me that up front and said, okay, what was the Titans' record? I would have said, yeah, they probably won 5 or 6 games. I mean, that is, you're right, unsustainable. So they have to be way better in that area. And hopefully, whether it's Joseph, McCann, both, Gostkowski, the return of Ryan Suckup, whatever, it's like having a bad bullpen in baseball. It usually infects your team. It infects the way the coaches coach when they get to a certain point on the field. Yep. They need to have confidence in their kicking game this year.
Yeah, I mean, it got into Vrabel's head there. There was one game, yep, man, when he decided to kick. I mean, he had no confidence in the kicker after he missed. And I mean, so I think it cost him a game, maybe even two. So then if you look at their record, then you say, oh, okay, they should have been 10-6 or 11-5 if they believed in their kicking game and if they would have done what normal kickers that start in the National Football League usually do. And that's to say that was going to happen, but it seems like that would have been in their favor. So, yeah, I think you got to – you're trying to go on that run. That's why the kicking game and then bringing another piece to that pass rushing game to take down my homies, Jackson. And, yeah, don't forget Watson, by the way. Yeah, so to make sure you take those three teams down, you need that, no doubt, to get to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, you know, you look at the teams, you know, that made it. I mean, look at the Ravens. You know, Jason Tucker is an absolute weapon for them.
Yeah.
You know, from like 60 yards and in. Yeah. Now, not many teams have that, but you do need some reliability. And Ryan Succop, when he was healthy, you know, had good numbers. He did, and he had some range. But, you know, circumstances dictated, and maybe part of it was the salary cap that they had to move on. But, you know, we haven't heard anything from Succop as far as what he's going to try to do this year, if he's going to try to resurrect his career. But, yeah, you know, they've got to have, as you said, not only a plan A, but a plan B, C, and D to make sure those numbers aren't duplicated.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be opposed to bringing in Succop, too. The more, the merrier. You get to see if he's healthy. You get to see him against, you know, an elite kicker, Gronkowski, as well as you got a young a kicker that you believe in. So, hey, man, I'm all in for all three of them. And then maybe if you get in a situation as before, if they're still available, you use one of them. Yeah, oh, no doubt. They always talk about, and they as Vrabel and JR talking about raising the level of competition again in every position. Well, that's raising the level of competition at the kicking game. Yeah, so I love it.
Blaine, I also believe that the great unknown for camp within the next couple of weeks is, will any NFL players opt out? And if so, are they going to be key players? If you're the Titans, just hypothetically, if they show up for camp and Taylor Lewan decides that he doesn't feel safe and he wants to take the year off, what are you going to do then? And, you know, in the NFL, not as easy to replace a guy. And, you know, given the current climate, you know, what would happen in terms of the cap? You know, what would it could create a lot of problems. But I think there's a definite possibility that more than a few players might decide that that they don't want to risk, you know, going to camp or playing football in this current atmosphere. And that could really put a team in a bind.
Oh, no question about it. I guess first and foremost, will they receive their contract?
Yeah.
Let's start there, and that's going to dictate how most of these guys are going to determine if they're out there or not, and if they have to be quarantined away from their families for a period of time, I think they would be willing to do that. It's just a different mindset in the National Football League. So I don't see that happening. If it does, guess what? My man, the Undertaker to the rescue, because now they drafted the Wilson kid out of Georgia. So you get your wish, Mark. He's on the field immediately, and Undertaker's still out there, too, so we both win. So, but you don't want that scenario to happen. Lewan's one of the most athletic and best offensive linemen in the league, offensive tackles in the league. So, yeah, they just – well, you know, you also could have the theory of one of your elite players test positive, asymptomatic, and have to miss 2 weeks. Kind of what happened this year, if we want to look at it that way, with Lewan being out. So you never want any of that to happen, but you got to know it's going to. That's why I say, are you going to increase the rosters, the practice squad rosters, even more so, just to handle things like that? Because once they get to going, and if it's not a lot of outbreaks, individual teams, and just some here or there on each individual team, they're going to keep that thing, that train moving. The NFL, they're not going to stop for, you know, a handful of guys on one team testing asymptomatic and everybody else is playing the other team. So they're going to keep it moving. And the issue part is, one, if you have an outbreak and then that team has to shut down and they play one less game or two less games than another team, then how do you base off who makes the playoffs, who doesn't? There's a lot of tentacles here that could be get kind of crazy here, and you just hope it doesn't happen. But I think the NFL is going to try to do everything they can to play football.
And the other part of this is, if they cancel a game, do the players get paid? Do the players who are ready to play get paid? So that's kind of a knotty problem. The league is still trying to hash out with the Players Association.
Yeah, they did get come money to an from agreement escrow.
On protocols, but what's that?
They go get their money from escrow.
Well, that's a whole horrible, different issue.
Man. That's horrible.
It is horrible, but it is certainly an element of this season. If there are no fans in the stands or limited fans in the stands, and when your salary cap is tied to revenues and you don't have that ticket revenue, how is that going to affect the cap? I think most owners and players would agree to keep the cap flat for the next couple of years and maybe find a mechanism to do that. Anyway, we'll discuss that and more with Titans beat writer David Beauclair from SI.com on the other side. 7:12 on the Wake Up Zone on 104.5 The Zone. Right. 7:18 on the Wake Up Zone on 104.5 The Zone. Mark Howard, Blaine Bishop, and of course our producer Jonathan Schaefer. And as always, we're powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors. Let's bring in, of course, David Beauclair, Titans beat writer for SI.com, presented by the Tennessee Education Lottery, who's proud to have raised more than $5 billion to support education programs in Tennessee. To learn more about programs funded by the lottery, visit tnlottery.com. David, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are we doing today?
We are good. Okay, TikTok.
Yeah.
John Robinson has less than a week to come to terms with Derrick Henry on a multi-year deal. Do you think it's going to happen?
I do. I think it's, there's been nothing to indicate any sort of animosity or any sort of trouble other than, I guess, agreeing on a number. And as time runs down, both sides become more and more compelled to make an agreement. So I think we'll hear something first thing next week. I would imagine that this deal will get done and everybody can breathe a sigh of relief that Derrick Henry will be around for a while.
What about the identity element? Now, ESPN.com is sort of in their position ranking mode, at least for this preseason, where they polled a number of NFL executives, coaches, and even some players to rank players at every position. Henry was fifth at running back, which surprised me a little bit because he obviously led the NFL with 1,540 yards. But if you look at receiving yards and receptions here, you know, Henry had, 18 receptions last year for 206 yards. Alvin Kamara of the Saints had 81 catches for 533. Ezekiel Elliott of the Cowboys, 54 catches for 420 yards. McCaffrey, of course, Christian McCaffrey of Carolina, 116 catches for 1,005 yards. And Saquon Barkley was their number one running back. He had 52 catches for 438. So obviously, the four running backs ranked ahead of Henry, and everything is subjective, but they seem to be more three-down backs, better receivers, as opposed to Henry, who is a really, really good two-down running back.
Yeah, and I think that's a stylistic ranking. It's a sign of the times. It's sort of what most people think running backs should be doing nowadays. But there was some interesting comments, I believe it was on CBSSports.com last week from Jackie Slater, the Hall of Fame tackle, and he sort of talked about the Titans' run game and the variety that the Titans use and the way that kind of the different ways that they use Derrick Henry in the run game, as opposed to the way he looked at it, most teams have very simple run games right now. And then he sort of talked about what some of us have around here have talked about and sort of looked at over the years, which is defense is getting smaller and smaller to deal with more of the spread offenses. And he basically said a guy like Derrick Henry, you know, you can beat on those 260-pound defensive ends through the first three quarters, and they're useless rushing the passer in the fourth. So, you know, this is one of those things I think where the Titans are zagging a little bit while the rest of the league is zagging, and it really might work well for them as long as Henry stays productive.
We're speaking to David Beauclair from SI.com.
Yeah, Bokey, I think you hit the nail on the head there with that, and I completely agree with that, is that, you know, it's a passing league now, and they're zigging and say, we're going to run the football, and everybody's building their defenses to stop the passing game, which when you mean smaller, more athletic, faster, you know, players. And so you're hitting them right in the head and running right at them, and they go, uh-oh, we're trying to use our athleticism to run around blocks instead of punching them in the mouth and taking on blocks. So I completely agree with that. You know what? I'm always going to ask you about the Clowney watch TikTok. You almost sound like you were going to have an announcement that you know that the Titans are going to sign Henry though first. So you think they're going to sign Henry to a long-term deal?
I don't know that they are. I think they are. You've been through contract talks. I mean, you know what it's like, and both sides will use the media in these things. You know, when things aren't going well, the teams and the players both will try to use the media to sort of sway things a little bit, and that has not been the case here, which suggests to me it you know, everything that everybody has said publicly has been very amicable. It's been there's just nothing to suggest that this thing won't get done, because I think it's clear Derrick Henry likes being a part of this team and likes you know what kind of what we just talked about, though. I think he's, you know, I don't think he looks around at what Christian McCaffrey and Alvin Kamara and those guys are doing and thinking, God, I wish these guys would throw me the ball a lot more. I wish these guys would use me differently. I think he's very aware of who and what he is and appreciates the fact that the Titans understand who and what he is and how to use him. And so I don't think he's looking around thinking the grass is greener or any of that. It's just a matter of both sides arriving at what the numbers are in terms of money and years on this deal. And you know, I've said it before, I'll say it again, nothing gets a deal done like a deadline. And that deadline is a week away now. So there's that says to me there's a strong chance it gets done here in the next few days.
Oh, David Beauclair, SI.com. I guess, Bokey, what are your thoughts on the NFL saying we're going to have two preseason games, and then the players coming back and saying, no, we don't need preseason games. We have a committee here that you guys agreed with that we need 48 days, and 48 days I don't think we're going to be able to have.
Yeah, This is to a lesser extent what we've seen in Major League Baseball. This is both sides trying to float a bigger agenda than just what needs to happen in advance of the 2020 regular season. I think the players increasingly, and the Players Association, the issue of player safety and the number of hits guys are going to take and those sorts of things are more and more becoming more and more prominent in terms of what the players want. The players are really becoming concerned with their long-term health and the whole CTE issue and that the best way, at least any of us can come up with right now to deal with that, is to limit the number of blows you take to the head and elsewhere. So fewer games, even if it's, you know, if you're a starter, for example, you probably play what, about 80, 90 preseason plays total in those four games. And, that's you know, that you eliminate those over the course of a 5-6 year career, that's a good number of hits. So I think the players are trying to say to the owners, this is the time to talk about limiting hits. And you know, the owners have wanted to reduce the preseason from 4 games to 2 for a long time. They see this as their opportunity to get there. And you know, what we ultimately end up with, I mean, who knows? As we're all seeing, this is all still changing day to day with the coronavirus. So, you know, we might not even have training camps going in August still. So who knows?
Well, what the Titans did last year and being really, you know, 1 game away from being in the Super Bowl, are we looking too far ahead as medias and thinking that they will be contending team and have a possibility at the Super Bowl? Do you think they are a Super Bowl contending team?
I do think they're a contender. You know, I and one of the things, and I wrote about it this week, this sort of lull in the off season gave me a chance to kind of go back and review some of the interviews we did and this and that, and there was a common theme that came up, and Kevin Byard actually kind of voiced it best last week or the week before when he was on Good Morning Football on the NFL Network, where he you know, it's this sense that 2019 was fun. The playoff run was nice, but you get a little distance from it. And what did we accomplish? Well, not much. You know, we didn't get to the Super Bowl, didn't win the Super Bowl, and that's all anybody cares about. And you contrast that to 2017 when you win the playoff game at Kansas City and get to New England and play them in a competitive game, and you feel like, you know, after 8 years away, like, okay, we're back, now we're a playoff team. And then you start 2018 and you're 3-1 and you win 3 close games, and you're running around saying, you know, the league needs to respect us now, needs to respect us, and then ultimately you don't make the playoffs. A lot of these guys have been through all of that and learned those lessons, and there is this lack of satisfaction right now that I think is important that can fuel another playoff run. Obviously, you know, Derrick Henry has to stay healthy. Ryan Tannehill has to stay healthy. Those are two big ones right off the bat. We saw what happened last year with Taylor Lewan wasn't in there for 4 games, so you'd have to say Taylor Lewan's another guy who needs to stay healthy. But this is a good enough team that they should be able to go into this season thinking, if we do the things we're supposed to do, we'll give ourselves a chance.
I gotta ask you this lastly, and he's not even with the organization anymore. More, if you can sign Logan Ryan for the league minimum offer, let's say $3 million for me, whatever, a bargain. Do you think the Titans would even consider that?
I personally would. I would think, you know, Logan sort of, I wouldn't say he burned the bridge completely, but he charted a little bit. It might not be passable coming back after, you know, after John Robinson had apparently told him, look, you know, we're moving on. You're not coming back here. But, you know, that's a remarkable situation to me that a guy like that would be still out there at this point. But I guess for him it comes down to money, and he has a number in mind. Nobody seems inclined to give it to him, so somebody's going to have to budge at some point. And to your question, Blaine, I think it's going to be Logan Ryan who's going to have to budge and accept a much smaller deal than he wanted to. And I'm sure he learned from the Kenny Vaccaro experience, and he's probably sitting back right now thinking, well, I'll wait. Somebody's going to get hurt early in the preseason, and they're going to need me a lot more than they need me right now, and that'll change things. So, Kenny Vaccaro made the most of the opportunity he got here with the Titans, and that's probably the mindset Logan Ryan has to have now.
We're with David Beauclair with SI.com.
You know, John Robinson had a lot of interesting things to say to our colleague Paul Kaharsky, including what's up with Jadeveon Clowney. And he's been, I haven't heard, you know, through the years, at least the Titans GM, talk about a player still out on the market as much as the Titans talk about Clowney. It seems like the planets are lining up for the Titans to have a really good shot with him, since the Browns reworked their deal with Olivier Vernon. But what about Robinson saying that he needs to see Clowney in person? The workout on social media looked pretty good, but he wants an in-house physical before they make a decision.
Yeah, you know, and your point's well taken, Mark. And it's one of two things. Either it's we really, you know, we've had conversations with this guy. He knows where we stand. He knows we want him. There's nothing to talk about right now until we can get him in here. But I'm going to keep sending these public signals out there to make sure he knows we still love him and we still want him. Or it's, we've got no shot at this guy. What the hell? I'll just say it and have some fun with the fans and the media and whatnot. But I think it's the former. I think it's look, there's absolutely nothing for us to talk about. So we're not talking, but I'm sending up these signals saying, hey, you know, we're still here. We're still thinking about you. We still, when the opportunity presents itself, we want to get you in here right away, get our doctors to look at you, have a physical, and then we'll get down to brass tacks of talking about a deal. And you know, I have said it over the last couple weeks, the more time has passed, the more it seems like other teams have sort of moved on, done what they need to do, and said we're not willing to wait anymore. The Titans seem like they're willing to wait, and they might very well be the last team standing when Jadeveon Clowney is willing and able to sign.
One aspect that really doesn't get talked about in connection with the NFL, and it's been pretty prominent with Major League Baseball, the NBA, even the NHL, which has an important vote today. Who's going to opt out? Is anybody going to opt out? Will those players be key players? You know, I said, for instance, on the Titans, what if Taylor Lewan decides that he doesn't feel safe and says, you know what, I'm taking this year off? What if, another key player on this team decides the same thing? You know, seasons can be altered. Fortunes, can ride on this, or team fortunes, actually. So what about that aspect of this story?
Yeah, it's a great question, Mark, and you haven't really heard a lot of that speculation with the NFL players the way you have with the NBA and MLB in particular. And you know, maybe that's something about the nature of the sport where you have to have everybody has to be working in conjunction with one another at the same time, and there is a little more accountability, or consistent maybe accountability to your teammates there. I don't know, but or maybe guys feel like with all the helmets and all the pads that there's, you know, they don't feel as exposed, even though it's a collision sport. If it starts happening in the NFL, it'll be you're right. I mean, and Taylor Lewan's a perfect example. You know, he's a father to young children. He has reason to be concerned about whether he would bring the coronavirus home. And a lot of these guys are of that age where they have young children and probably, you know, probably need to think about.
Yeah, there are a lot of guys on the roster in a similar situation. Yeah. I just cherry picked Lewan. Because if he decided that would have a huge impact.
Yeah.
Okay. The other thing I wanted to ask you about is, should we be alarmed at the Nashville SC story that so many players tested positive, or is what the MLS doing, is that just a different animal in terms of the players coming in, from different corners of the world, and maybe they're testing procedure and their protocols are just different?
No, I think that's the big challenge for everybody in every sport. And what if the Titans win their first two games and then all of a sudden in week three, 12 guys test positive? You know, I mean, there's no indication that this coronavirus is going to go away at any time soon. It's spreading and it's growing at a rapid pace. And the league can do what it can in terms of limiting people in the buildings and whatnot, but these guys are going to go home to their families, and their families have been out shopping during the day or wherever they've been too. And I mean, it won't take much for a team, whether it's the Titans or another NFL team, to, you know, if it gets in one of those locker rooms, it'll spread quickly, and then you know what happens. Do teams forfeit a game? We've talked about the expanded practice squads. Are you going to have enough guys to deal with that, and are they going to be good enough to make you competitive for a couple of weeks? These are issues that are hanging out there that nobody has absolute answers to, which is why no one can say for certain that we're going to have a 16-game season or even any season at all. I'd certainly hope we have some football. I'm as much as anybody looking forward to football, but am I willing to bet my life that we're going to have football? I can't say that right now. I guess all we can do is take it day by day and see where we are come what September 10th, whatever the day is that the Titans open the regular season.
Great stuff, Bochy. I'm sorry.
Yeah, one more thing, though. Last thing we haven't asked about, you know, we still got to ask about that veteran quarterback, because what if Tannehill tests positive, asymptomatic, and then all of a sudden, whoa, our Super Bowl dreams are gone.
Yeah, and Blaine, this is, you know, we've talked about this where, you know, I think the Titans would be in position to get somebody who's cut by another team, and, you know, it's likely that teams are going to be able to have extra quarterbacks, that you're going to be able to protect quarterbacks. So those guys might not be available. That's going to be a real tricky situation for the Titans, trying to figure out what their backup quarterback situation is going into the season.
Thank you, David.
All right, boys. Have a good day.
David Beauclair from SI.com, by the way, brought to you by the Tennessee Education Lottery. On the other side, Brad Crawford from 24/7 Sports. We'll shift gears, talk college football. 7:39 on the Wake Up Zone on 104.5 The Zone. On the Wake Up Zone on 104.5 The Zone, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors. Mark Howard, Blaine Bishop, Kevin Ingram off this week. Our producer, Jonathan Schaefer, though, hale and hearty from the Zone Studios. Let's bring in our buddy Brad Crawford from 24/7 Sports. Of course, he writes about college football. Brad, good morning.
Hey, man, thanks for having me.
Before we get into coaches on the hot seat, and put this in its proper perspective, the Ivy League, of course, opted to punt on all fall sports, perhaps moving them to the spring, which includes football. Do you think that's going to have any effect at all on the rest of the college football world?
I don't think it affects Power Five programs, but group of five programs potentially. Several group of five coaches that we've been in contact with, you know, recently have said if there's no football this season and no football in the spring, you could see a lot of varsity sports, you know, being cut at those smaller programs. And let's face it, man, it's going to hurt Power Five schools as well if we don't have a football season. So while the Ivy League decision yesterday was definitely a black eye for the sport and potentially damning, I don't think it affects, you know, the Power Five ranks too much. Here we are about probably 3 or 4 weeks away from knowing if we'll have a season or not.
Your colleague at The Athletic, Andy Staples, wrote about this yesterday, and that is coaches having a force majeure clause in their contracts. It does exist for a number of coaches, which would mean if there was no college football, their contracts could be voided.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest too, man. Even if we have a full college football season, I mean, how many schools out there are going to be able to, one, afford buyouts to fire coaches, and two, you know, pay a new head coach a lucrative, you know, 5 to 7 year deal with this pandemic that's really expected to, you know, knife football revenue by, what, nearly 80-85% at most universities. So while we may see some coaching changes at the end of this season if we have a full year, any of those coaches with those high buyouts, maybe a like a Will Muschamp at South Carolina is $13 million, I think, in December. You know, I don't see schools, football programs having the money to do that.
All right, on to your hot seat ranking, which is always fun this time of year, unless you're one of the people you're writing about. And in town here in Nashville, Derek Mason has to be feeling the heat at Vanderbilt, doesn't he?
Yeah, man. You know, the old saying in coaching is you never want to be the guy who follows the guy. And that just happened to be what, you know, Derek has in Nashville. James Franklin sort of, you know, made expectations borderline unobtainable, in my opinion, with those back-to-back nine-win seasons. And Derek, I think over 7 years now, hasn't had a winning season yet. He did get to that bowl game, but, you know, it looks like Derek's trajectory is headed in the wrong direction. And while he's a great guy and a respected defensive-minded coach, he just hasn't got it done at the Vanderbilt level that they want to see.
The other one that really kind of grabbed me a little bit was Scott Frost, because, you know, that's a guy who had a tremendous amount of success at Central Florida, and he goes back to his school. He was a hot commodity any way you look at it, but it seems like the honeymoon, if it isn't over, is near the end there for Frost in Nebraska.
My colleague at CBS, Dennis Dodd, had him as a 5 on the hot seat scale, meaning if he doesn't win this year, he's out. I'd probably have him 2 or 3 just because I still think the Nebraska fan base and the administration especially support Scott. You know, they thought it was a home run hire 2 years ago. I think all of us media folks almost unanimously thought the same. So, you know, the first half of the season for Nebraska, in my opinion, is huge for Scott Frost. You know, if he wants to get to bowl eligibility, he's going to have to, you know, win 4 or 5 of those games in the first half. You look at the final 5 weeks of the season for the Huskers, man, it's brutal. They've got Ohio State, Penn State, Iowa, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. That's 5 games against probably 4 top 15 teams. So if Nebraska's 3-3 heading into that, you know, final stretch, they're not going to a bowl game. And I think heading into the 2021 season, Scott Frost will be coaching for his job.
Speaking of Brad Crawford of 24/7 Sports.
Well, Brad, man, speaking of coaches, and I've kind of been real critical of Jimbo Fisher and what he's done there at Texas A&M with that Texas talent. Has he lived up to expectations?
I think so far he's about where I thought he would be. You know, A&M's a program where I think last summer I put them on the teams on the rise, and on the rise meaning the 2020 season is going to be huge for Jimbo. You know, he has a senior quarterback in Kellen Mond. I think if you talk to Jimbo personally, he'll tell you that this is the best team he's had so far in College Station. But he still doesn't have, you know, the signature win. He's lost to Clemson twice. He has several, you know, games against ranked teams in the SEC he hasn't beaten. He did win that 7 overtime game against LSU a couple years ago. That was a real fun one. But yeah, this is a very big season for Texas A&M. I think the over-under win total for most odds makers is 8.5. So if you see an 8-4 season out of the Aggies this fall, you know, it'll be a disappointment. And you know, the Texas A&M invested $75 million over a decade in Jimbo to not just win the SEC West, but compete for college football playoff berths. And this is a very big year for him.
Do you think there's a possibility, if things get delayed in college football, could spring ball actually work? And if you believe that, then how would you think it should be structured, or when should it start?
Yeah, I think spring ball from a revenue standpoint would work, because you're going to have, you know, college football fans who, let's face it, haven't attended a game in a year, anxious to get back to the stadium. Whether social distancing measures are in place and we see 15% to 20% capacity, I'm not sure. But I think the main draw of spring football, man, would be we would have 6 months more to learn about this virus, potentially get a vaccine out, who knows if it would work or not, and you sort of just delay the timeline a bit. But, you know, right now, here we are, early July. The past couple weeks have not been good for college football as far as trying to project us playing the first weekend of September. And I will say this, if we do have a spring season, some of the biggest names in the sport, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, Ja'Marr Chase, I don't think those guys are going to play. There's no way with the NFL draft in late April, you're going to have, you know, projected first-round picks risking injury in the month leading up to the draft. If I was one of those guys, I sure would play.
Oh, no doubt about it. You know, just kind of interesting, just kind of a statement here. I just want to get your thoughts on it. You know, why do we think that college football can happen when the rest of the country, you know, and businesses can't even open 100%?
Yeah, that's a very good question, man, and that's the one I think everybody's asking right now. I think you're going to see over the next few weeks with the NBA beginning back at Disney World and Major League Baseball trying to play, you know, college football administrators and the decision makers are going to kind of look at those two leagues and how they're doing that. One thing I've heard, though, that if we have a season that starts on time, you know, testing for players every week is going to be a costly measure for these universities. And they're already losing major revenue because we're not going to see, you know, capacity stadiums this fall. So I think the best case scenario, though, is, you know, we still start the first week of September. If we have to move to a conference-only schedule, so be it. But the number one priority is making sure these student-athletes are safe and they're getting the proper care necessary to not catch this virus.
He's pumping out the product for sure for 24/7 sports. And CBSSports.com, Brad Crawford. Great stuff as always. Stay safe, and we'll speak to you down the line.
Talk to you all soon, fellas.
All right. Straight ahead, why we should take Nashville's initiative for a Major League Baseball franchise a lot more seriously. 7:54 on the Wake Up Zone on 104.5 The Zone.